this is where the knockdown, drag-out fights start in my extension meetings.
For more on that, stay tuned. From Virginia Farm Bureau, this is Cattle Pulse, your monthly update on the Virginia feeder cattle markets, the national trends that affect them, and stories of cattle producers from around the Commonwealth. I'm your host, Elijah Griles, and from Appalachia to the Eastern Shore, we're excited to have you with us. Hello and welcome to the April episode of Cattle Pulse. We're so excited that you've joined us. We have a jam-packed episode today. We're going to be talking about record high prices at the state-graded feeder cattle auctions, giving an update on the national futures outlook, as well as an interesting interview talking about the economics of hay production. But let's get started by taking a look at our weather and climate outlook for the month of April. The drought monitor is currently showing that we are 6 weeks drought-free, and this is the longest period since we had an extremely wet fall in 2020 and the winter of 2021. According to the NAS Crop Progress Report, the state is ahead on rain anywhere from 0.4 inches in Roanoke to 5.8 inches in Richmond. Now, the NOAA Climate Prediction Center for April is showing that we have a 33 to 40% chance of above normal temperatures in April and a 33 to 40% chance of above normal precipitation in the majority of the state, except for the southeastern corner, which is showing a 40 to 50% chance of above normal precipitation. Now let's talk about our national feeder cattle futures numbers. The April contract is at $246.10 a hundredweight, down 3.13%. The May contract is at $247.55 a hundredweight, down 3.6%. The August contract is at $257.33 a hundredweight, down 3.38%. Since the last episode, we have seen those futures contracts numbers come down, especially in the nearby months like April, May, and even looking to the end of the summer in August. I want to talk about a couple different points. The first is our most recent cattle on feed report. USDA reported there were 11.8 million head on feed as of March 1st, and this is up 1% from a year ago. Placements in February were 1.89 million, and this is 10% above year-ago numbers and 6% above January. And this is an anomaly, but the estimation is that it's likely due to winter storms that we saw in January across the Midwest and even into the eastern parts of the U.S., and February was a day longer this year, so that can contribute to the number of working days and how many cattle are being placed. Warm weather in February also meant that Midwestern wheat pastures, particularly in Oklahoma, jumped and cattle had to be taken off earlier than they normally would be in order to let that wheat grow so that it can be harvested later this year. Kansas State University has a meat demand monitor, and this is a monthly report that they put out related to kind of what consumer preferences are. The February report showed that consumer willingness to pay increased in February, which is the last available, to $8.59 a pound for ground beef, and this is up from $8.30 a pound in January. Now, 27% of respondents to the meat demand monitor survey did say that they would choose chicken breast, followed by 25% choosing ground beef, and only 13% choosing pork chops. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we have had record-breaking numbers at our feeder cattle auctions across the state. Let's go ahead and look at those market averages for the month of March. For five-weight steers, medium and large one, Abingdon Tri-State saw an average price of $279.21 a hundredweight. This is up 4.24% from a month ago. Blackstone was at $286.83 a hundredweight, up 3.1%. Lynchburg was at $297.23 a hundredweight, up 5.96%. Radiant was at $291.11 a hundredweight, up 3.09%. Shenandoah Valley was at $289.85 a hundredweight, up 1.46%, and Winchester came in at $301.80 a hundredweight, up 5.68%. This leads us to a six-market statewide average of $291 a hundredweight, up 3.92%. The Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services Market News Service confirmed that in February, the monthly average price for a 5 to 600 pound feeder steer, medium and large one, was $281.42 a hundredweight, and this broke Virginia's record high of $258.34 a hundredweight, which was set in June of 2015. Based on the data that we collect for this podcast, we anticipate that the March state graded feeder cattle auction average prices will also exceed the record that we set in February. So it's a very exciting time. We've got a lot of movement in these markets and a lot of strength moving into the historical average market peak of April. The question that some of us may be asking, though, is why are our markets still trending higher even though we're seeing this pullback in the feeder cattle futures? And I think the primary thing that we're going to look at here is stockers, the demand for calves that are going to be put on grass throughout the summer. That's probably giving us a strengthening of our market moving into the spring. We've seen some warm weather early on, which may be giving us a jump on some of that grass and getting some people itching to buy to go ahead and get those stockers out for the summer months. We're going to continue to follow these trends as we move into really uncharted territory as we break records in our state feeder cattle auctions. Well, we want to say welcome to Dr. Alex White. He's an instructor in the Department of Dairy Science at Virginia Tech. Thanks so much for joining us today, Doc White.
Certainly. It's good to be here, Elijah.
Yeah, and it's that time of year where many producers are gearing up for hay season. Last year, Virginians harvested 1.16 million acres of hay, and that produced 2.35 million tons. And most of this was grown on farms with less than 250 acres in production. So we've brought Doc White in today to talk about kind of the economics of hay production. And before producers head out to the field, what should they be thinking about?
There's an awful lot to think about, as they know. When it comes to hay production, the economics of it, it's one of the best ways to start a fight in a conversation. You need a lot of equipment in order to produce your own hay. So if you have the equipment and you don't do much acreage, chances are, from an economic standpoint, you're better off to purchase your hay or have somebody else bale your hay for you rather than doing it yourself.
Is there a magic number? Is there a right amount of acreage in Virginia that could kind of get us over that hump of being productive enough to make it worth it?
It's going to depend on the production system and the amount of assets that you have. Let's just throw out some numbers here. Relatively decent equipment, mid-sized equipment. We need a tractor, at least one tractor. We need a mower. We need a baler. We need a rake, possibly a tedder, and then maybe some wagons or transport equipment there. We may need a second power unit there. So let's just assume that all that together, we can put get our equipment. The value is $150,000. Some people will laugh and say that's way too high, and some will laugh and say it's way too low, but let's use $150,000 as the value of your hay equipment. We know the operating costs. We know the fuel, the repairs, the twine, those sorts of expenses. We have a good idea. But the one expense we always seem to forget about are those fixed expenses or the overhead expenses of the equipment. That equipment's depreciating. It's you have money tied up in it. So there's an interest cost to it. You may be paying property taxes. You may have insurance premiums on the equipment. So what my basic estimate for the annual ownership cost is somewhere between 20 and 25% annually. So for $150,000 worth of equipment, if we were to look at that on times 20%, we're looking at $30,000 a year of overhead costs. This is in addition to the fuel, the repairs, the labor, and so on. So if I'm only producing 100 tons of hay, so what would that be, 50 acres of grass hay? If I'm only producing 100 tons, well, that means my fixed costs are going to be $300 a ton. Well, that's not affordable. We need to be able to get that number down. So the more acres you can put, you can use that hay equipment for, the more economically efficient you're going to be.
I think the numbers really do help because it kind of puts into perspective that some of the costs that aren't as easy to see or think about. When you go out to the fuel pump, you're thinking about that cost, but you're not necessarily thinking about the overhead cost of the equipment and then it's sitting in the shed 8 or 9 months out of the year. A lot of times that making hay and putting it up and having it there for the winter is kind of seen as this security blanket of being able to weather, you know, particularly cold winter or a dry summer where it doesn't rain. Just in your experience, kind of what are ways to accomplish a similar level of resilience without necessarily going and having that great expense?
The main thing I always hear is, well, I can make the hay better than the custom person can, or I don't want to have to wait on the custom person, which makes perfect sense. You don't know when they get there. That can have a significant impact on the quality and the quantity of hay that you're getting. But the custom person coming in might be able to do it much more efficiently, so they can get in and out of your fields a lot quicker than you can, because they do it for a living and you do it a couple of months out of the year. But what we can think about doing there, again, is maybe we'll have some of that equipment, but maybe we'll have some of it custom done. Maybe we can work an arrangement with our neighbors so that maybe we have the mower and they have the baler, and we'll just sort of trade off as we go. That's sort of the European model out there, is instead of everybody having a baler, somebody in the community has a baler and we sort of share it around the local farms. We can look at purchasing your hay, and there in today's world, the cost of transportation is really affecting that. But if we buy a trailer load or a truckload of hay and have it shipped in, it's going to be tested. We know the quality. We know we're going to get it. So that can take some of the risk out for us as well. You've opened a lot of cans of worms here as far as, should I make my own hay or not? This is where the knockdown, dragout fights start in my extension meetings and actually talking to some of my neighbors. But you just need to take a look at it and see what it's going to cost you. So we need to know your cost of production for the hay. And when you do the cost of production, you need to include those overhead costs, your depreciation, your property taxes, your interest that you either paying on loans, or the interest that you have just because you have the money tied up in the equipment. So we just need to take a step back, think we don't have to be traditional and produce our own hay. There are other options out there that might be a little bit riskier, but they might be more effective for you from a financial standpoint.
Thank you for that overview.
Certainly, I enjoyed it.
Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us for this April episode of Cattle Pulse. It has been great to have you along, and we look forward to talking to you next month.